I think we're good to go.
Yeah, we're good to go. I was muted there, and my special effects didn't work, which I had up right at the start of the screen, but should be okay now. Is everybody hear me okay in the chat? Yeah, we are. Yeah, I think we're up and running. I used to have a fella in the chat. I don't know where he is now, but now I'm just flying blind again. You know how people have got like whole squads of moderators and everything? It's like not now. It's in, on my channel, it's just sort of, there doesn't seem to be any moderators there or anything. I haven't really got a clue what goes on in the chat. Anyway, here we are. We're up and running. How are you doing, Endeavor?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, I saw somebody in the chat earlier on said, are we going to be talking about the conscription thing? I did a big article at Substack yesterday on all of this unfolding chaos in the world. And the answer is no. This is where I let my hair down. Well, it would be if I had any hair. This is my little classic movie stream is relaxed. We put the troubles of the world outside and we just have a bit of banter about some movie. And in the case of today with Carlito's Way, it's all like there isn't even very many political hot takes to get into with it. What did you think of Carlito's Way, Endeavor?
Well, it was a good, exciting crime drama. I liked the movie. This was the first time I had seen it. I hadn't even heard of it before, actually, which is kind of surprising considering it's starring Al Pacino. I liked the movie, but yeah, like I said, it's like you said, it's not a super political thing. There aren't these huge deep dives that we can take into it, but that's all right. I mean, nonetheless, it's still going to be a fun stream, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have very many sort of one-liners and stuff like that in it. But I think it's have you ever seen Scarface?
No version and then the original 1930s one.
Well, have you seen the one with Al Pacino?
Yes, I have.
Right, so I think Carlito's Way is a kind of spiritual sort of sequel to Scarface, but not quite because it's sort of its opposite. But what it's about is Al Pacino is it, and he's a Puerto Rican gangster. So we're well into gangster territory here. And he is surprisingly, because of his lawyer's shenanigans, let out of jail. After 5 years, he's supposed to have gone down for 30. And he's called Carlito Briganti, and he was the top boy, a real legend in the coke dealing gangster world. And he comes back on the streets and he wants to get a load of money together. He doesn't want to get involved. He doesn't want to be part of the crime scene because he never ever wants to go back to jail. He thought that he was pretty much, he was going to die in jail. So he's got a second chance at life. So he goes back out onto the street, but he doesn't want to be involved. He wants to get his woman. He wants to get a load of money together. And then he wants to head off to the Bahamas where he can sell secondhand cars with his friend and live happily ever after. And as far as that's concerned, that's the main through line of the movie. But the problem is, of course, he finds it almost impossible to get out of the street. He's dragged in time and time again into more and more trouble, not least because of his lawyer, who's actually the most anti-Semitic sort of stereotype I have ever seen in a Hollywood movie. He's called David Kleinfeld, and he is played by Sean Penn. And it really is like the most anti-Semitic. I cannot believe they got away with it. I cannot believe they got away with the David Kleinfeld character. And he has actually got his own plot line where he ripped off a mob boss for $1 million, and the mob boss has now blackmailed him, said you're gonna get me out of here, or my crew are gonna come after you and kill you. And on top of that, Carlito ends up getting a nightclub, and then early on he comes across a little scumbag called Benny Blanco from the Bronx, who he bitch slaps around a little bit and completely disrespects. And Benny is kind of Carlito, a youthful, what Carlito would have been like in the past. And it's his younger self in a way, a symbol of his younger self in his crazy days. And he sets up himself for more trouble by the way he treats him. And just even the way that he has to get his money together is a problem. So because he needs the 75K to get out off the street. And it's all about this sort of inevitability that the past is going to be dragged around with you. You know, what would you say to that? And have any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'd say that the overarching theme of the movie, and this is something you commonly see in crime dramas and in gangster films, is the theme of fate. The idea is that, well, this is who Carlito or Davey or all these other characters in the film, this is who they are. And, you know, this is their lifestyle. They can never escape it. And it's eventually going to lead to their deaths. And you see that throughout the film with Carlito's character. So he just gets out of jail. Like you mentioned, he was supposed to be spending 30 years in jail, but he ends up only spending 5. And then he tries to do like a favor for this one friend. And then it ends up in this drug deal gone wrong where he ends up having to shoot and kill 2 or 3 guys, but then he makes off with $30,000 and he uses that to buy a steak in a nightclub. But then, you know, there's that Benny from the Bronx guy there, and he's saying he wants nothing to do with him because he's a punk and a wild young guy. And eventually this actually ends up coming back to bite Carlito because he's trying to get away from that life. But then, you know, him rejecting this guy eventually ends up coming back to bite him at the very end of the film. You see that with Davey's character as well. His racket, and I do have to say the stereotype is really funny. So Davey, that would be Sean Penn's character. He's this defense lawyer who represents mafia members and tries to get them out of the legal trouble they're in and tries to help them avoid justice. You know, he's very effeminate. He's very greedy, very cunning, and he has like, you know, this giant, well, fro, that hairstyle. I mean, that's just the cherry on the top of the sundae. But, you know, he has a different kind of racket, but he still is amoral in the same way. Whereas Carlito, his is more of a brutish, masculine way of beating money out of his enemies. With Davey, it's this effeminate, weaselly kind of cunning way of exploiting loopholes and ripping people off, committing fraud. But at the end, basically with all the characters, the life that they lead ends up coming back to bite them. I mean, other than Carlito's girlfriend and the district attorney, were there any good characters in the movie?
Well, to be honest, even the district attorney, even the law, the justice system is a bit dodgy, because they set up Davey with the tape, like and then they also, there's an old friend of Carlito gets sent in. He's a cripple now. I mean, that's pretty brutal. He took 3 shots in the back. He's in a wheelchair, and they blackmailed him and said, well, if you go in and you incriminate Carlito with a wire, we'll see about getting you out of prison. Otherwise, you're just not going to make it. So that's what he does. And it's pretty harsh, because then, Carlito doesn't kill him. But he's got this goon who follows him around called Pachanga, and he wanted him to kill him. I mean, there's some real characters in this. Like with all these, this kind of era of gangster movies, you've got, I do love the kind of over-the-top characters who are in it. Like, I wrote a few of the names down. Goodfellas takes the cake, takes the biscuit for all of these crazy characters. So, like, in this one, the main gangster that is being ripped off, who's in jail, is called Tony T. But then there's also somebody called Fat Anthony. And then you've got, in Goodfellas, you had some character called, I think it was Johnny 2 times, because he said everything twice. And then you've got Benny Blanco from the Bronx. And then you've got this grotesque character called Pachanga. Like it's a real bunch of scumbags.
Is he the bouncer? Is he the bouncer at the club?
Pachanga's the one. He's really ugly, and he's the one that wants to kill Benny Blanco at the start, but then later he actually sides with Benny, and Benny shoots him at the end. So the idea is because Carlito has shown weakness, he hasn't gone through. So what happens is earlier on in the nightclub, Carlito snubs Benny Blanco, and then he snubs him again. Now, he shouldn't really have done that. This is the problem that he's got, because either he's a tough guy and he's in the world, or he isn't, and he's out of it and above it all. But you can see that in his kind of old ways. He says it as well. It's like the old reactions are kicking in. He's going back to the way he was. And when he's referring to that, I think you can kind of, it's a little inside thing where you can think Tony Montana and Scarface. The nightclub is called El Paradiso or El Parisio or something. It's like Hispanic. And that's also the name of the club in Scarface, I believe, or the diner. But so there's like deliberate winks and nods to say it's not officially, you know, because obviously Tony Montana gets gunned down at the end, and he's also Cuban. Carlito is Puerto Rican. We can get onto the diversity elements about all this in a bit. But the what I'm saying is that if it was Tony Montana, he would have just killed Benny Blanco. But Benny Blanco is the young kind of buck on his way up, you know, he wants to prove himself. And Carlito is kind of like slightly getting on a bit. And he's lacking that resolve. He's lacking that bite now. And this is what costs him, because it means that the others smell weakness and they're going to go and, you know, they're going to go for the up and comer who's got all this energy. So by rights, he should have just killed Benny Blanco, and he knows it as well. He says so in the voiceover, and this is what's going to come back and get him later on.
Yeah. So in a kind of an ironic way, him trying to get out of the life by wanting to have nothing to do with this guy, that Benny Blanco, who he sees right away is this loose cannon. At the end of the film, as he's boarding the train after having shot the sons of Tony T, were Tony T and Fat Anthony the same guy?
I think they might have been. Fat Anthony's only mentioned once. Tony T is the one in the jail. I mean, okay, he's got two sons.
Yeah. So, basically, Davey, you mentioned, had scammed Tony T, because he was his defense lawyer. Davies was the defense lawyer for both Carlito and Tony T. And while Tony T was in prison, he scammed him, and he said Tony T says he's going to hire a hit on Benny if he doesn't spring him from prison. But then once they actually go through with the job to spring him, Benny kills Tony T and one of his sons. Then his other son gets his revenge, and he goes after Carlito. After he's able to escape from the guys hunting him down, trying to kill him at the very end of the movie, just as he's boarding the train and he's gonna go off to Miami, then sail off to the Caribbean with his pregnant wife, and retire, leave his old life of crime behind. It is kind of a cliche of the gangster movie, but you know, the guy jumps out. Benny Blanco. Yeah, he jumps out and then shoots him. And then it's ironic that he wanted nothing to do with this guy at the beginning, but him basically snubbing this guy and making him feel like disrespected is why this guy came back and killed him at the end. So. You know, it kind of just fits in with that overall theme of like, there's just when you lead a life of crime like this, there's really just no escape from it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we should say that the director of this is really top notch. It's Brian De Palma, and he also did The Untouchables and Scarface, and a few other good films as well. But it's I mean, we said it last, we did a little podcast with Greg Johnson last night, and I was saying I just really miss that we don't have films like this anymore because it's just so well made. So when actually the film opens, it's the ending. So you see Carlito on the stretcher. He's doing the little voiceover thing where it's like he knows he's dying, basically. And then what it is that throughout the movie, you see the kind of the few months that led up to that. But what's amazing, like the last 20 minutes of the movie is just absolutely phenomenal because it's where all of these things that have been set up begin to get activated. So you've got the issue with Kleinfeld being set up, like the mob killing. Then you've got the problem that the mob are now on his tail and they're coming after him and he needs the money and he's on the clock because Gail, his woman, is waiting for him to hightail it out of there to get to the Bahamas. So you've got all of these through lines which have been set up and they all start to fall apart towards the end of it. And then you get this magnificent scene, 20 minutes or so, where he's trying to get to the train, and he's trying, and the mob, it begins in his nightclub, because at that point the mob don't actually know if he was on the boat and involved with Kleinfeld's kind of killing of Tony T. So he has to placate them, and he's trying to sort of get on the right side and this kind of thing. But he's getting them champagne, trying to buy himself some time. And then he sneaks along behind the counter, gets his money, and then goes out from under. There's a trapdoor. And then when he hits the street, they begin to figure out, like, not only was he there, but now he's escaping. And then the music kicks in and you realize, like, this is it. And they chase him all through the streets, and then through the underground, and then into the main sort of central train station. It's brilliantly done. Absolutely excellent, excellent filmmaking. But what's weird about it is that we always knew since the beginning of the movie that he was going to die at the end. Yet it's so well done that you're still kind of rooting. You're still kind of thinking, well, he's done it, you know. There's a big kickoff when the Italian mob, because there's different factions in this, but the Italian mob are neutralized. There's four or five of them. And they get killed by Carlito and then one by the cops. But then, and you've forgotten all about Benny Blanco, and he's actually from the Hispanic wing of, you know, the up and coming wing, and you've forgotten all about him. You just assume stupidly that, well, he's done it. He's going to live happily ever after. And then it's this kind of the sneaky little punk, the little shit gets him right at the final hurdle, and you think, well, this is a real pisser because, oh, yeah, I was told this was going to happen at the start of the movie, and yet now I understand all these things have been set up. I've seen his whole arc, and now I can see, like, yeah, it was inevitable. And I think that's a kind of deeper layer to a sort of poetic thing to the whole thing, the whole film.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even like the Italian mob that gets him. It's this little punk that, you know, the guy who he basically says that he snubs at the beginning because he just wants nothing to do with him. Yeah, you often see that in this genre. And I also felt that, like, as the film was going in the second and third act of the film, you really do want him to get away. Like, I found that I found myself really starting to root for him. Because they have those scenes where he's reunited with his girlfriend. Now she's gonna have a baby. He's talking about getting out of because New York City does seem like a hellhole in this movie. Like, it just doesn't seem pleasant at all. I mean, we can get onto the diversity aspect earlier, but a little bit later. But you know, let's just say that I don't think there are many descendants of the Mayflower walking around in this city in the movie. It does just feel like this violent, grimy, place where there's just this dominated by this ethnic gang warfare gangster warfare, mafia warfare going on. And you start to, in the scenes where he's talking about going to the Caribbean, you imagine the contrast of him lying on the beach in I don't know, the Bahamas or something, with his beautiful wife and a young son or daughter with him, and he's left behind his life of crime, and he's gonna have like this peaceful but that's not gonna happen, but it still really builds up the feeling that you really want it to happen. And I guess, you know, with the gangster movies, you kind of have to, they can't really give you a happy ending because, well, would it really be just, you know, would you really want the guy? Because it gets you to really sympathize with him. But you have to remember that ultimately he is a scumbag. He's not a guy who's lived a moral life. So,
yeah, they all tend to be morality players, the gangster movies. That's mainly what I mean. We've got David Kleinfeld on the that's his lawyer. I mean, there's a face you can trust. And the funny thing is, like, the ethnic stereotypes in it. I've always meant to do a piece on Casino, because it's in these gangster movies, for whatever reason. I mean, this isn't that old, it's 1993, Casino is 95. But it is interesting in the age of sort of hyper-political correctness that they really went all in on like sort of ethnic and racial stereotypes. I mean, this is David Kleinfeld. Today that would be seen as horribly anti-Semitic. And yet at the end of the day, we're only talking about 1993. But then on top of that, I mean, like the only sort of Anglo, and I say this because it is important, because it is like, what I mean is like the Anglo WASP contingent ethnically, rather than just saying white. That is like the Justice Department. That's the only, and then Gail as well, who's like his trophy. That she's like this idealized female, which is a weakness of Brian De Palma. He did it with Michelle Pfeiffer as well. I think Brian De Palma's like a bit of a simp, for especially for blondes. But whatever, I mean, that's forgivable, I suppose, when you're talking about somebody like Michelle Pfeiffer. But the point that I'm getting at is that, like, the ethnic sort of stereotypes and stuff, like, it really reveals something about, like, mass immigration and multiculturalism, because it's saying that all these imports to America add absolutely nothing to the value of the country. Again, this is not me, you know, just for the sake of YouTube and these days the British state. I'm just ruminating on a movie here. I mean, it's quite clear that, like, even Carlito, he's very charismatic. It's Al Pacino. But a figure like Carlito in real life would be an absolute scumbag, especially when he was in his prime. I mean, like, is there any real reason why Benny Blanco or Pechanga, or for that matter, David Kleinfeld, like, well, what are these people actually contributing to the United States? Are they given anything positive or constructive to the country?
Well, yeah, that was the exact thought that I had through the entire movie, that, you know, this wouldn't be happening in a WASP America. And it is one thing that, like, I don't feel that the movie was meant to be a commentary on multiculturalism or diversity or whatever. You know, it's just a more frank and honest look at how, you know, ethnic dynamics would play out. It's kind of like it's setting them up in a way that, you know, that they, you know, you would imagine how gangs would form along ethnic lines. You'd have, you know, this really greasy Hispanic gang, and then this pretty greasy Italian gang as well, and then this greasy, Semitic lawyer who is weaseling his way around, and it just feels like a much more authentic way that they would portray. They wouldn't have used the word multiculturalism back then, but like a multi-ethnic, a multi-ethnic America. That's really the way it is. It's not this happy clappy rainbow unicorns. Let's hold hands together and say kumbaya and sing kumbaya. It's basically people just wrestling over material wealth, the material excesses of a successful society, and basically trying to wrestle it for themselves. You know, this Puerto Rican gang. Like, you get the sense that someone like Carlito says he's from Puerto Rico. Did he come to America because he really loved the country, or did he come there because it's like, well, this is my opportunity to make money? That's what's good about it. It's because it doesn't feel, first of all, it's much more raw portrayal of what, you know, a multi-ethnic society would actually be like. But I don't feel it's trying to, like, you know, force present day right-wing politics either. I don't think it's like trying to be a commentary on that. It just kind of shows go ahead.
It's just objective.
It's just objective, yeah.
Yeah, but they're not particularly trying to demonize like Latinos or Italians or Jews for that matter, but they're just trying to say this is like a fair reflection of the world of crime, where you've got dodgy, crooked lawyers, and you've got these, in the Italian case, it's a much more organized and older sort of criminal structure, literally organized crime. And the arrival of the Hispanics, this is the Carlito's Way, set in 1975. And I think Scarface has actually said maybe a few years later. I think it's later.
1980 something.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so it's a few years later. But whatever. They're not. It's like it's hard for us to imagine, but there was a time before everything got destroyed by political correctness, where you could do these kinds of things, and you see it poking through. I think even back then, you may have to be more careful about how you portrayed Black Americans, African Americans is the preferred term, isn't it? But in terms of these other groups, what you'll see as well is that they've all got agency. They're absolutely not victims. They're not like these. Imagine how ridiculous it is to say that these groups portrayed in Carlito's Way are like victim groups. Like, then they're not. The victim here is white America. The victim here is the traditional America, and people who are just going out and living their lives and paying taxes. They are the victims of all of these people, these crooks and killers and psychotics who've been brought in, who are bleeding them white.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because when you consider the groups that they have here, so it takes place in 1975. This would have been 10 years after Hart Celler. So yeah, the Hispanics are kind of the new kids on the block, so to say, in New York City. They're the recent arrivals. But then even before that, you know, the Italians and Jews were, you know, also later arrivals. They weren't, you know, the founding stock of the United States. They arrived throughout the late 19th and early 20th century, and then, you know, you have the Hispanics arriving in the late 20th century and up until today. You know, it just feels like, you know, it's a series of mistakes going on and on. You know, this is what a century of immigration has turned America into, and well, we all know that it's gotten worse since 1975. But still, it's just really interesting to kind of see the different aspects, and they don't really touch on like the issue of immigration in the movie. But you instinctually know that these groups are somewhat foreign to America. They're definitely not the founding stock WASP Americans. They're all foreign in a certain way, and it's also why they obviously have no real connection to the land. It's kind of just a country that they saw was extremely wealthy, and they came to because they wanted to get a piece of that wealth for themselves.
They all very casually use like racial slurs about each other as well. That's another thing that's all throughout the gangster genre. Like the Italians would be, I mean, I can't even use the names on YouTube. That's where we are now. But the Italians would have their own slurs for the Latinos, and the Latinos would for the Italians, and they all would for the Jews or for the blacks. What I'm getting at is that everybody is ethnically aware. Everybody is racially aware, and they understand there isn't us and the them. It's a very tribal world. And you see it in, just to sort of skip a little bit, in Casino, there's this, it's very stark in Casino, which is why I wanted to do something on it for years. Because there again, you've got a kind of, you've got the Italians, and they're like the muscle. They're the ones who are actually going out and sort of breaking legs and bringing in money. And then you've got a kind of middle strata, which is the Jews in the system. As lawyers and whatnot, as sort of middlemen. But then you've also, and they kind of flip-flop to their allegiance, but then you've also got the kind of the WASP or rednecks of Nevada, isn't it? The whites in Nevada, who are the sheriffs and the county officials, like they're all openly sort of, to use the term, racist against the others. So this was a time before, like this was a time in the 70s when everybody was like that. But it's as far as the white population. I mean, I realize we're straying onto some pretty mind-laden territory for YouTube here. But in terms of in the 70s, you could see that everybody was racially aware. And this idea now that we're supposed to be, everybody's just colorblind, and it's just ahistorical gibberish. It's just not a fact of life. And you can go back and you can watch a gangster movie from 30 years ago, and you can see it instantly. Everybody knows that they have an in-group, and then there's other out-groups. And furthermore, those other out-groups have got particular characteristics. And today, this is all, you're just not allowed to notice it. You're not allowed to see it. But you know, we still do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you can't imagine one of these guys saying to the other one, like calling them racist or something like that. I mean, it's not going to happen. But another thing to point out is that with these mafias, so these are totally like amoral individuals. They are it's this pre-civilization tribalism. You know, they don't. They obviously flagrantly violate the law and have really no regard for traditional ideas of right and wrong. You know, they're not afraid of murder, of extortion, of fraud, of anything, any kind of amorality. But what they do maintain, though, is ethnic bonds. So their loyalty to their ethnic group is. That basically is their morality. So you know, to go against your tribe, to go against your group, is to break the rules of the kind of mafia society that they've created. The omerta is a phrase that you often hear in these mafia films. It's the code of honor that you don't ever talk to the police. You never inform upon another gangster. They kind of have this somewhat like Old Testament, very tribal morality, where you know all the things that we really think of as right and wrong in civil society. Well, that all goes out the window, and it's really just like it's really just loyalty. It's all about being loyal to the family, and that's a huge theme in a lot of mafia films as well, and even video games. I recently replayed. The first video game, which was just called Mafia, the remastered version, and the message of the game is about loyalty and family. And despite the fact that they're not particularly offended by murder, loyalty to the family is still extremely important to them.
Yeah, it's obviously in the Italians. I mean, it is like this ancient sort of. Blood ties. It really is like this. It's almost sort of pagan, and that's where your loyalties lie. And in my case, in my view, that's actually a healthier, stronger bond than some abstract principle or an ideology. I've always thought that actually, and when you see your own clan being wronged, then you want to see somebody pay for that, you know? And there's a kind of irony to it because, like, the most forward-thinking progressive liberal policies are responsible for bringing in, like, these ancient kind of blood ties and networks and not being able to deal with them on their own terms. You can't deal with this kind of problem, this kind of mindset, using liberalism, which kind of sees everybody as just individuals, or you then bring in the sort of the cultural Marxism and you begin to explain away certain disparities and certain behaviors through these power dynamics. But that doesn't really mesh up properly either, because, like I said before, then you would have Kleinfeld or Carlito or Pechanga as being in somehow some sort of victim, when they're obviously not. They've got agency. They're not stupid. They're able to craft and carry out very complicated plans, and they work together in a very well organized and well oiled machine organizationally. So you're not dealing with people who don't have agency. They do have agency. They've just got a completely different value set from wider liberal society, and in this case, they benefited from it as well. They literally took it to the cleaners. But they are, at the end of the day, if you're not going to play by those rules of the wider society, they are like parasites when it comes down to it. There's no other way. And I'm talking about specifically the organized crime here, not in a racial sense, just for the sake of YouTube and the British government. You can see that organized crime is along those lines, which they've booked the system. They've short-circuited it, the wiring of liberalism, and they're just profiting off it.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, Kleinfeld, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but about the morality that kind of led to, you know, his people rising to the top. It is kind of bucking is basically disregarding the morality of what, you know, Gentile society considers to be moral, and basically just if it's good for your group, then it's moral. That's the morality that they live by. But it's also the morality that, like, the gangs live by in these gangster movies. You know, there's one thing I absolutely despise in modern films, and it's oftentimes you'll see this in modern gangster stuff, is that it's some, like, badass rough guy. He'll cut your throat. He'll break your skull with a hammer and feel no remorse. But if you're racist, well, then he gets offended. So, you know, he, like so many people are putting Peaky Blinders in the chat. I didn't watch that show through to the end, but there's this great meme from a few years ago that, like, his reaction when he sees his guys. When he sees his guys torturing and murdering people, well, he doesn't care. But when he sees somebody being racist in the 1930s in Britain, then he gets angry. Like, so it's just terrible. It's just terrible writing for two reasons. One is that it's overtly political, and it's just shoving present day politics in your face in a really ham-fisted way. But secondly, it just doesn't make sense for the character. So some rough mafia guy, like, if he's okay with murder, he's not going to be offended by racism. But what you see in movies like this, though, is, like I mentioned, loyalty to the group, loyalty to their guys is that's their form of morality. It's almost like, they don't care if you're a murderer, as long as you are racist, then you're a moral person. That's kind of the gang warfare morality.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I recently watched Breaking Bad again, all of it, and he's literally called Walter White, the main character. And after I watched it, it's very clever. It's very well written. And then when you go on, like, YouTube, you've got, like, thousands of video essays about it. And I was watching some of them. And the thing with Walter White is that he is the most boring family man. He is like the sort of the white, professional, middle-class American who's never struggled. He's always paid his taxes. He's never broke the law. He's just the normie. And everything they've done about his character is sort of designed initially to make him as boring and normal as possible. He's this completely bland, inoffensive man. And of course, the storyline is that he is brilliant, though. He is very, very highly intelligent, but even he's been screwed over by the system. So he, instead of being like a whiz with chemistry, he's just like a high school teacher. He's just this downtrodden, overachieving, boring white male. And of course, because he gets cancer, he wants to provide for his family. He's been posed with like a sort of existential problem. And then he starts cooking meth. And so he gets involved in the criminal underworld, where you begin to see more of the sort of characters you'll see in Carlito's Way. They're not as charismatic and they're not as interesting as the great gangster movies, I will say that. But what I find interesting is that Walter White, all of these sort of theory cell takes on it will be how Walter White is like, he's now this Nietzschean overman, you know. He's entered this sort of Heideggerian thing where he's breaking through all of the rules of society and he's passing beyond and imposing his will finally, and all it goes on and on, like all these takes like that. And I think, yep, but at the end of the day, why is it that like a middle-aged white man has to go through all of this philosophical existential cope when it's Fat Tony from the Bronx? It's just normal for him, for these other groups. They don't have to go through all those hoops. They just do it. They're just in a way like living it. It's only the white man who has to go through all of that sort of theory still takes in order to get back to the basic thing of sort of taking the world by the scruff of the neck, giving it a shake, providing for your family, your wife and your kid, no matter what. Like, I don't care what rules I have to break, it will be done. And when it's, Walter White of the world, you have to go through all of this kind of process of rationalizing and philosophizing about it. But all of these other, the people who are up on the screen there now, for them, that's how they begin the world. That's where they start, you know?
So I guess to answer that question, I'd say, and I haven't seen Breaking Bad, so I can't really comment on it, but the idea of like, why does the ordinary white guy have to go through this really like strong, like long moral dilemma to basically do what just comes natural to these guys? I'd say that the answer to that is probably because as much as it's wrong think these days to acknowledge this, America or whatever Western country you may reside in, these are still implicitly white societies. Regardless of all the talk about diversity and stuff, who is it that really identifies with the American nation? Well, it's white America, I know that the Italians came a bit later, and there's a bit of a difference between the WASPs, the Irish, the Italians. I would say that today it still exists to a degree, but not so much anymore. It's less than it would have been even in the 1970s or certainly in the early 20th century. And to go against it, you're in some ways betraying your own society. You know what I mean there. Whereas from the perspective of the outsider, you're just exploiting one. So why would a white man, let's say a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant American guy whose ancestors came over on the Mayflower, why would he have a harder time embracing that kind of attitude that I'm gonna break all the rules, I don't care, I'm gonna become this Nietzschean ubermensch? Well, It's because he is going against the society that he ultimately identifies with. Now, I know that that's kind of waning today, but still, like, I do think that that is still the case to an extent. Whereas someone like, let's just say, like Puerto Rican immigrants who showed up in New York, they don't have that same kind of morality because they don't identify with it. They don't see it as their country in the same respect. So they don't have the connection to like the Mayflower and the American Revolution, and they probably weren't raised giving the Pledge of Allegiance in class and watching John Wayne. You know, it's a land of opportunity, and a lot of people have commented that the other great Al Pacino film Scarface is really like that. It's like America for like they say that a lot of Hispanics absolutely love the movie Scarface because it's kind of the vision of America for the outsider. It's one that, well, it's this land where I don't really have any kind of responsibility to it. It's just a big pot of gold and I'm here to exploit it.
Yeah, it is, because the situation that the white Americans in is that if we go back and you think of the Klan sort of mentality, but then you expand it out so it's across the whole country. It's probably better to use somewhere like, say, Sweden as an example of this, because they're very law-abiding as well. And I mean, I think Kevin McDonald's wrote about this, actually, where within that's how you actually get individualism, because it's within the context of a homogenous society where everybody pretty much understands the rules and will have a degree of empathy with each other. And so what you get when you get outgroups coming into that, they're going to hack it. And they're gonna take advantage of it, which is exactly what Carlito's way is. But for the host population, it's right what you were saying. They would be then betraying the values of their own sort of extended clan in a way. So it is a point well made. I mean, somebody in the chat says we shouldn't be talking about the racial angle on this. I totally disagree. I think you can't get around the addressing these issues in this. If you walk into a movie like this and you're not seeing ethnicity and race, like, you're just not understanding the movie at all. You're not understanding any of it. But it doesn't mean that we have to spend the whole stream talking about it, but it definitely has to be touched on. But, you know, to move on a little bit, what I do appreciate and like about this is I think I'm probably the same age as Carlito is in this movie. And you get this, you're too young, of course, but what it does do is address in a way that the issue of like the aging male. Like, we see, because Carlito has been away and he's aware that he's still got it. He's aware that he can still slap down Benny Blanco. He still intimidates people and he still scares them on his reputation, on his earlier reputation. And when push comes to shove, he's still got that now. He's still got his street smarts and everything, but he's also keenly aware that he's on the clock. Like, it's obvious when you look at just how young and energetic Benny Blanco is. There's a weariness, you know, and it's something that I increasingly it's on my mind. I remember, give me a second, I'm going to cough. I remember my dad, I've got a younger brother, and my dad had to fight some of the battles because I was away from a younger brother. I lived on the continent. And I remember one time he was saying to my mother, like, at the end of the day, the youngins, as he would say, like, it gets difficult. It gets more and more difficult because they're getting younger and I'm getting older. And I got this real sense of this sort of the lion, you know, the lion heading into winter. I've got a bit of a cough here, but and so the theme of male aging when you've been a well respected sort of fella, and you're beginning to get a little bit past it, that's plays strongly in Carlito's way.
Okay, yeah, I also do like the theme of like the aging guy trying to get out, but it always catches up to him. So, you know, because, you know, how old was Al Pacino have been in this film?
Probably
already in his 50s.
Yeah, I'm not as old as that, but he would have been about 50.
So he would have been in his 50s by now. So, you know, now these days, I mean, it's rare to see a movie where the star is under 65 because, you know, there's no new actors these days. But he's already kind of getting up there in age for to be a gangster. So, you know, you'd see in a lot of the Scorsese movies, there'd be De Niro and Joe Pesci in the 1980s. But, you know, eventually they get on with age, and eventually, you know, you can't be the rough bruiser anymore when you're walking around with this, like, when you're walking around hunched over and you look like you're headed off to the early bird special. It feels like Carlito, he's like really kind of exhausted by it all. So not only does he feel like he just got out of prison and he wants to live his second he wants to live his second chance. He's also just feel like he's too old for it. And that I think that's the contrast you see between him and Benny Blanco, that he's like this obnoxious guy, young guy. And Carlito is just like, oh, I'm too old for this. But, you know, again, at the end, that's what came back and bit him.
I mean, Joe Pesci was quite old, even when he was doing the crazy Joe Pesci in Goodfellas and Casino. I think he was well into his 50s then. But he's absolutely ancient now. But the aging theme in the movie, it kind of ties in with the main story, which is that, yeah, he's running out of time in terms of his age, but also that he's looking for an escape. So it's like he also needs to get out with his money in Gale, and that's also that route is also being shut off from him. So the in a way he's trapped by his age, but he's also almost, you know, and then he's almost free but not quite. So the two things like complement each other perfectly. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, so that's all I had to say on the aging thing, really. But it's something that I feel you do, because I don't normally get personal, you know, in my content and whatnot. But you do start to feel that. I mean, when I was growing up in the North Tyneside, it was quite rough and tumble. And we would watch these gangster movies. Now, people weren't being murdered. It wasn't as wild as what it is in these movies. But there is. I have lived that. I have lived that where people. If I go back now to certain places, it's quite clear that I am the old fella, and a lot of the younger ones will know who I am as well. That's just the way it is, and the same way they did with me dad. And you, another thing that I like what Carlito does, what he says, is that he is what he calls the last of the Mohicans. And what he means is that there's a whole crew of them came from Puerto Rico. They made their mark, but they're all dead. And I don't want to be like all doom and gloom and whatnot, but it's like, I get that as well. Like when you get into your 40s, you know, A lot of the people that I grew up with are just not around anymore. They're dead, and it's this like macabre thing that I kind of make jokes about, and it touches on you, but you also feel it because it ends up where a lot of your memories, of your youth, the people who were there at the time, like, are all dead, or there's only two of you left. I was having sitting in a countryside, like a forest walk where I go sometimes with the dog a few years ago. And my dad, it was a lovely summer's day. And my dad came through, and I didn't expect to see him. We went for a pint, and I was out walking because within like 3 months, I lost two of my old friends. My old sort of wrecking crew were dead. And my dad's obviously like 20 odd year older than me again. And he was saying, like, he feels as if the way he put it was like, you step out of, it's as if in World War One you step out of the trenches and they get you, all of your mates have just been shot and they're all lying dead, but for some miraculous reason, like you're still standing there, like wondering when it's going to get you as well. And I realize it's very doom and gloomy, but in Carlito's way, I think it does that very good. He's wandering around past his time, and he says that again and again, and you know, like. In these kind of movies, you don't see that anymore. It's a movie for men in a way, and I think we're missing that now because all of the movies are directed to like teenage girls. So for me, in my 40s, I can watch this and some of the themes, even though I've never been a Puerto Rican gangster or anything like that, but it does resonate with you quite a bit. You do get those themes, and I think Brian De Palma knew it. So you suddenly you're watching a movie as like a man in your 40s or whatever, and you realize like he's talking about you. Yes, Carlito is an ex-gangster. He's running from the Italian mob, and he's in with Kleinfeld and his little capers and schemes. That's all there on the surface, but underneath is the angst of a man of a certain age who realizes he's on the clock. I mean, Heat with Pacino, he did that 2 years later. It's the same thing. I mean, a few years ago, I did a quite in-depth review of Heat, which has got those similar themes as well. I mean, there's another similarity with Heat and Carlito's Way because De Niro is the one who's on the clock. And he's also in his 40s, and he's doing the exact same thing. He wants to get out with Edie, one last job, and then that's it. I'm on my way. But in the end, he has to go back because he has to go back for his ego and kill Wayne Grew. And in this, in Carlito's Way, he's a bit, I mean, he doesn't have as much of that ego, that kind of professional autism that De Niro does in Heat. But because otherwise he would have definitely killed Benny Blanco and the rest of them. But so he just heads straight for the money and tries to run for it. So he's still on the clock. He needs to get out. He's running out of time in terms of his age. He's running out of time in terms of how long he's got so that he can actually get out. And he doesn't make it either. There's a lot of symmetry there. But what I do appreciate is that I can watch a movie like this and think this is actually for me. I mean, I will say, like, a lot of the young gangbangers, the urban youth types, they do like these movies because they're violent and it's kind of cool to be a gangster. But as I say, at this age, I kind of get the themes of it. Like, I'm running out. I don't have all the time in the world and this kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I've only seen the movie once, but he didn't really need to help Davey spring fat Tony from prison, did he? Or did he do that out of loyalty, or was it?
Well, this opens up a whole sort of can of worms, because he has to live by the code of the street. So because Kleinfeld got him out of a 30-year stretch, which he would never have seen. That would have been him in jail until he died. But as for one technicality or another, and for Kleinfeld being a bit, you know, a bit dodgy, they get him out. He's sprung out after 5 years, so he thinks, I've got a second life here. I never expected this to happen. So he feels as if he's owed Kleinfeld his life. And so if you get back to the kind of code of the street, he says that, I think he says at the beginning, like, you saved my life, you're my brother, even though, like, it's the worst person in the world who you would want to have that kind of bond with. But he is lumbered with that. He is stuck with that. So when it comes out that Kleinfeld says, I'm being threatened by the mob, they want me to spring him out, or he's gonna get me killed. But when he claims that I've embezzled $1 million of his money, and then after it, he comes. His scheme is that he goes out into the harbor, and something's happened on the inside of the, it's a floating prison, like a massive barge. And then he's in the water, and then his son's on the boat, and Kleinfeld murders Tony T while he's in the water. Then he also murders his son. And this, of course, this is like, Pacino says, you've killed us. You've killed us because these Italians, like, what are they? What, they just mysteriously drowned? They got, and Kleinfeld says, yeah, we'll just, it'll go out there that they got hit off a boat or something when they were on, it was a botched escape. And Carlito was like, this is, the Italians are going to see straight through this. This is not going to, nobody is going to believe this bullshit story. But then he says, like, this is it, we're done. Like, we're even now. So he has to live by that code. That's also why he doesn't tell the justice, the cops, what's going on, even after Kleinfeld has betrayed him. And they play a tape where Kleinfeld's at this point stabbed he did rob the $1 million as well, and then he betrayed Tony T and he murdered his son. But then it also turns out that he's willing to sell Carlito himself to the feds to get him put back in jail if they cut him a plea on the problems that he's got with the mob. So you've got all of this just total corruption and conniving backstabbing from this Kleinfeld. But even then, Pacino is sworn never to sort of dob somebody in, never to snitch to the cops and the feds, because that would be breaking the code of the street. So if you want to see, he's kind of having his cake and eating it as well, because if he did want to fully get out, then he would do that. In other words, like, you have, let's say, a normie world where you'll be protected by the system and by the cops, but that will mean breaking your bond to the criminal world. And in the end, he's never able to break his bond to the criminal world, and that's kind of what it does for him in the end.
I also find it interesting with the character of Kleinfeld that, like I mentioned, so we know his ethnic background, and you know they're not exactly known for their physicality. They're known for being cunning and deceptive, and you know, cutting these backroom deals and getting money through extortion. Let's just say, like, they don't have this. There's a big contrast between them and traditional like the masculinity of European men. You know, let's just say not so many of Kleinfeld's ancestors would have quite been Vikings, let's just say. So Kleinfeld, he's really effeminate, really cunning, and the business that Tony T and Carlito are involved in, like, that's a bit too up close and personal for him. He prefers to carry out his crimes sitting behind his desk in his law office. But in the film, he starts to try to become kind of a tough guy. So Kleinfeld, like, there's that one scene where they're at the club and he pulls out a gun, and then Tony T says to him, like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing carrying this thing around? Because he's trying to be something he's not. He's trying to be a tough. He's trying to kind of be a tough guy. Was it because he got addicted to cocaine? Is that why he started acting like that? Or what? I can't remember exactly.
No, I just think his lies and dishonesty were beginning to catch up on him, and it was beginning to stress him out. I think he was using coke as a way to cope with all of the shit that he brought on himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody says, he sort of did by taking the bullets out. Yes. But so what happens is Kleinfeld gets stabbed. The mob just figure it out straight away. They just come straight for him. They don't believe the story for a second. This is the Italian mob. So they go after him. They do a hit on him. He gets stabbed multiple times, but he doesn't die. He's in the hospital. So then the second son of Tony T, who's died, the tall fella on the screen right now, actually, he goes along and he's going to do a hit on him, but Carlito just goes in there before him. And then Kleinfeld comes clean that he stabbed Carlito in the back as well. And Carlito takes his gun off him and slyly empties out the chamber and tells him to put it back on the little table in front of Mona's bed, knowing that Vinny's going to come in the room and open fire. And that's exactly what happened. So Kleinfeld pulls the gun, and but there's no bullets left in it. And then Vinci just shoots him in the head. Vinny shoots him in the head. Now, the thing is, Carlito hasn't actually broken the code of the street there. What he should have done, the other fella, English Butcher, Batchers, is right. There's a take on this where what Carlito should have done was murder Kleinfeld himself, or at least tell them later in the nightclub, like, I took the bullets out of the gun. Because Vinny would have seen that he did pull a gun that was an empty chamber. But either way, Carlito could have got into their good graces by saying, I took care of Kleinfeld, either killing him himself or, making sure they know. Because they're going after him because they know, like, they find out he was on the boat as well. And he kind of tells them because he runs away. But, like, at the end of the day, you need that amazing sort of 20-minute scene at the end where he's frantically trying to get to the train. You could quibble. I mean, there's that. I watched a video earlier today where they were sort of they were saying that he should have made all of these different choices, that how he could have got out of it. But I think that kind of defeats the point of the movie. I don't think he should. I don't think it was ever going to be where he ends up in the Bahamas, like wearing shorts and getting suntan. That's not the kind of movie this is. At the end of the day, these gangster movies, they're violent and they're full of unpleasant people.
It wouldn't be a gangster movie if he made it to the Bahamas at the end.
It's a morality play. They're all morality plays. And almost all of them, people used to complain about these gangster movies because of the violence and because of just the bad language. And yeah, why not? The sort of racial language that they use. But they are, in their heart, all morality plays. The Godfather is seen as like the big daddy of them all, again with Pacino. And that's a long, epic story of Michael Corleone losing his soul. He destroys his family while trying to protect it from the outside world. And it hollows him out, and he loses all of his close loved ones. In Goodfellas, it's Ray Liotta, and he is he turns fed, and then he ends up living like the life of a normie at the end of it, and he absolutely despises it. Like, he just sort of pisses all over the American dream. When he used to be a wise guy, he used to have the best steaks and the best wine in the restaurant. And now, like, he orders, what is it, like chow mein, and it comes with a little packet of sauce and all of this. You've got Casino, where De Niro, another same background as Kleinfeld, he gets blown up in his car, but he loses everything pretty much as well. He just goes back. He survives it. And Joe Pesci gets beaten to death with a baseball bat and then buried alive. So they all do get their comeuppance. That is part of the trope of a gangster movie, is that they get their comeuppance. The thing with Carlito's way, though, is that Carlito's actually, as far as like sort of gangster scumbags go in the movies, he's one of the more moral ones. He's one of the least worst. You know, Joe Pesci would be at the other end of it, even then in Goodfellas, Joe Pesci gets shot in the back of the head. It's like he gets, and even though you've seen him be complete shit in the film, you do kind of feel bad because you're kind of gutted that such a fun character is leaving it. But Al Pacino is a lot more, he's a bit more decent because he's older, because he regrets his past, all of this thing. So that's kind of tragedy to the gangster movie. It is baked into the form itself. You can't just have him get away and dance around with a beautiful woman on a beach and live happily ever after. That's just not what these movies are.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to mention earlier is there is that great scene where Kleinfeld goes to the prison to talk to Tony T, because he was also his defense counsel, just like he was for Carlito. And there's a great part where he says, "You're gonna get me out of here," and he's like, "Well, I'll see what I can do." He's like, "No, you're gonna bust me out of here," and because Tony T is this like big, fat, greasy Italian guy, kind of looks like Super Mario. not really, but it's the same kind of type. And he grabs him and he pulls him close. He's like, "You're gonna do this, or else I'm gonna hire a hit on you." And Kleinfeld's just like, "I'm a defense counsel. I'm a lawyer." And you just see the contrast between like the masculine Italian mafioso boss versus the the Jewish feminine greasy lawyer who like makes his money through extortion. I really just love that scene because I just love the contrast between the tiny little runt with the curly hair that's known for their ethnic group and the big greasy Italian guy. And it's pretty funny. And then, I mean, ironically, he actually is the one who kills Tony T. But it's just a great scene.
I love the bit on the train during the chase at the end, and they're like the Tony T's squad are chasing Carlito through the carriages, and the music's pumping away, and it's all crazy, and they've got like this huge, like morbidly obese one in their crew, and he's kind of just getting in everyone's way. He's just like a big blubber ball. And what happens is the train stops every few minutes at a new platform, and the doors open, and they're all like about to start. They're all kind of getting ready to open fire on each other, and the doors open, and there's like about 10 sort of graduate cops come in, and they're all fully armed, and they're all WASPs, and you can hear like they're talking about the baseball game or something like that, and I thought it's great because here you see the kind of, this is like the strong arm of society itself. So you've got all of these, all of a sudden, there's a sort of contrast where you've got Carlito and the mob facing off against each other. It's all panting and all full of tension. But then you've got like all of these kind of, they're real kind of jocks, you know, they're real kind of chads, and they're young and they're just cadets or whatever it is. And they've all got guns on their side. And then it dawns on them all, like, for Carlito, it's a godsend because he realizes that he's safe for another few moments. But the general tone is like, these people will just kill us all, like scum, like the rats we are. And that kind of contrast was like, here is the real power. He has the power that will put you down in the end. But although I think, I mean, the whole other subject on something like The Sopranos, where it does show the end of it all. But yeah, I just think that's a nice moment because you began to see that the sort of all of the normies, all of the little sheep out there, that they don't have guns. They're not, in America they may, but the point is they're not particularly protected. They're not tough guys, but they do have the state. They do have all of these big cops who are probably better shots and better trained than these mobsters, you know.
Mm-hmm. And another good scene I found was the first not the first scene, but the one where there's the drug deal gone wrong. So there's that young guy who wants to make a deal for I think it's cocaine, and they go into the back room of some bar, and then the young guy doesn't realize what's going on, but then Carlito sees that, yeah, this is a setup, and there's a guy that's about to jump out and shoot us. One thing I love about that scene is when I saw that, I'm just like, where is this? This just looks like an absolutely wretched place. You know, a bunch of guys from, I don't know, Puerto Rico or wherever, in this back room, of this rundown bar dealing cocaine. And it sets the tone for the kind of it does set the tone pretty well for the kind of movie that's come.
Carlito, it's a famous scene because the Carlito senses that something bad's about to go down because he's a pro, of course, because he's seen all this many times before. And he tells him to watch. There's a pool table, and he says, like, I'll show you a trick. And he says, you stand there. So he makes one of the goons like look at eye level at the end of the pool table. And then he sets up he puts the cue ball on the chalk, and then just like sort of whacks it straight into the fella's face, and like the ball itself. And I thought, like, how much power do you, is that possible? I know it looks amazing, but realistically, the ball would just bounce off your face. It's not going to like break your nose or knock you on your back. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not a very good pool. And then with the cue, he smacks the other one straight over the back of the head, which I can't believe. But you do get the sense that, like, yeah, he's been in jail for years. Like, he's picked up all of these little things, and he says it took him 3 months to master it and everything. But yeah, it's a nice little touch where you're going to take somebody out by making them stare at a cue ball, and then you launch the ball straight into their nose.
and how long was he out of prison before that happened?
Oh, literally like 2 days.
It's like, I'm going to go clean 2 days later while there's this room full of dead guys with me standing over them with a gun.
When the violence does, there's not that much violence in Carlito's Way. I don't think it's as violent as Goodfellas, but when it does erupt, it's really graphic. And in the shootout in that bar there with the pool table scene, he does a thing, like there's one of them gets shot in the face, like he gets shot in the cheek, and he kind of wobbles a bit as he goes down. And I think it looks really gruesome, you know, like you don't often see someone get, because normally Hollywood likes people to get either shot in the forehead or shot in the chest or something. But in this case, like it gets shot in the cheek, and it just looks so sort of graphic and weird and wrong, you know?
Mm. Yeah, well, one thing somebody mentioned in the chat is that Viggo Mortensen even made an appearance in the movie. You notice that part?
Yeah, he's the one in the wheelchair wearing the wire. He's been around far longer than people think. I mean, it was a bit of a, it was a far cry from Aragorn, but... And he had like no dignity left whatsoever. They showed him in a flashback, and he was like this really handsome Lothario, you know, this kind of getting people together, master of ceremonies, you know, he was really handsome and everything. And then you saw what had happened to him, what this life had done to him. And he was just this wreck. He pulls out the towels. He says, I'm wearing diapers. He's got his old suit on, but it's all stained and crusty, and he can't walk anymore. He's just this pathetic snitch, and Carlito won't even kill him. He says, just shoot me, just kill me now. And he's like, nah, I'm not even going to kill you, which again is another mistake, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, it is kind of, I guess it was kind of going against the cliche of the gangster genre that whenever a guy is caught wearing a wire, well, then he's a dead man. So in this one, he actually lets the guy go. It was kind of a depressing scene, because you just see that, like how pathetic he looks, and especially that they cast Viggo Mortensen to play that role. It's a minor role. I think that's the only scene that he's in. But kind of depressing that they chose him for that scene, seeing as a couple of years later, he would play Aragorn.
I mean, I do think for the gangster genre in general is an interesting one. Just sort of because what you do, what I think the appeal of them is that like the modern world is kind of boring. You do what you're seeing is a sort of machismo and a toughness, which men can appreciate. But because in the West we've been like so domesticated and everything's been so made banal and boring, you know, there's a touch of Walter White about all of us. Well, you know, I know people won't like to hear that, but there is. And I think the mob gangster movie, it was a kind of outlet, because between sort of the 70s and then into the late 90s, when they kind of had their heyday, ending kind of with The Sopranos, which was a series in the 2000s, which was specifically about that. I mean, there's you know, it's specifically about like the mob and the Italians becoming normies, and all of the old ways were dying out. You know, there's that thing, that Noel Ignatieff thing about how the Irish became white, where they became part of the power structure, part of the system. Something similar to be said for the Italians as well. A lot where they kind of lost that kind of, you know, that energy and became more and more just sort of integrated into wider WASP society. And a lot of The Sopranos is that. A lot of The Sopranos is like lamenting that that's a process which is actually happening, that they're basically losing their identity. Go on.
Well, yeah, well, I just wanted to interject. I do have to say that, like, the thing about the Irish becoming white, it is actually incorrect. Now, it's correct to a degree. It's correct that they were separate from, they were seen as a separate group to WASPs, but a lot of leftists today use this as a way to deny race. So it is not true that the Irish were at one point not considered white. It's just that they were considered a different white ethnic group than WASP Americans. So just wanted to clarify that, because, you know, some people might be tearing us apart in the chat.
Yeah, well, in terms of the what they mean is that they were in the power structure. They're Marxists, so they're looking at it through a Marxist sort of lens, and it's not really about the color of people's skin, but where they slot into a power structure. And so they're saying, well, they were persecuted by the British, say. And then when they came to America, they weren't particularly well-liked or whatever. So that is the take, whether or not you agree with it. That's one thing or another. But they were considered an outgroup from the main power structure, which the Italians were as well. And then eventually what they're saying is, eventually they integrated into it and became part of it, where somebody like JFK would be the prime example of that actually happening, who's a bit of a celebrated figure in that, because of that reason. So then they can say, we've got right now you've got somebody like, you know, Joe Biden or whatever. These they all claim to have come from Ireland now. But to get back to the main, what I was saying there, I think because we are all kind of Walter Whites, that there's something in the gangster movie where you can see people bucking the trend, but not in like a battlefield or some ancient fantasy world, but like as we're looking at right now, like in train stations and in bars, and you can kind of get that sort of old masculinity. You can see that energy playing out within modernity. What would be more controversial would be the clannish aspects to it, you know. But the mob gangster thing is, yes, it's they're parasites, they're kind of degenerates and they're scumbags. But there's also something to be said that they're living on their own terms outside of the constraints of modernity, while at the same time being in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So that's all I really had to say on that. On the whole, I mean, The Sopranos is the story of that, how they were going in that. We could maybe cover that somehow sometime, even though it's a long series.
I actually haven't seen it, so I'd have to work my way through that before we did. That'd be cool.
I've only seen it once, but what they did in that was like a typical postmodern thing where they would actually quote lines from other gangster movies, so that the people in the characters in Sopranos would quote lines from The Godfather or Goodfellas. They're kind of breaking the fourth wall, I think it's called. It's like this postmodern thing where you've got a gangster series, but the gangsters are aware of gangster culture and wider society, which to a degree they would have to do. They would have to be that, you know, because it's not like Goodfellas or Casino or whatever would have existed in the world that they were in.
So it takes place in the 2000s, right?
Yeah. I think the first season was 1999 and then it ran through to about 2005, 2006. I only saw it once, so I can't pass too much commentary on it, though.
Yeah, I got to give a shout out to some guys in the chat. When you said they all claim to be Irish, one guy said even Obama did, and then that guy quoted Barack, then Obama, like the O apostrophe. Barack Obama, in Irish.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much all I've got to say on Carlito's Way. Like, have you got any parting shots?
No, just it was a exciting crime drama, good gangster film, and nothing too political, just good fun.
Yeah, somebody, KJ's, would The Sopranos be a meta of a meta kind of existence? Yeah, it is that. Because they're referencing, it's a pop culture phenomenon, which is referencing pop culture phenomenon. It's this kind of cycle. And for that reason, I've always kind of, I don't like that. Even when it came out, I was like, oh, yeah, that's cute. Like, one of the characters, in Goodfellas, there's a character called Spider, who's a waiter. And Joe Pesci, it's really bad. Joe Pesci shoots him in the foot. And then there's a little bit later, he's wobbling about and he mouths off to Joe Pesci. And then he just shoots him dead. And that character, it's quite gruesome. And then that character is one of the main characters in The Sopranos. So I think he even went to jail in real life. So you've just got like layers and layers of sort of replication of cultural forms. Christopher, yeah, somebody says. Travis, oh, that's the first and probably last super chat's just come in there from Travis Happy. Thank you very much. Oh, that reminds me, I got a coffee thing from Hunky Haggis, and he said, "Hi, Morga, thanks for all you do. Have you considered doing a voiceover for a GPS system? It would be brilliant if you were driving somewhere. If I was driving somewhere, I could get lost. And only to hear all right in 300 meters at the next roundabout, take the third exit onto Route Charles de Gaulle." No, I've never thought about doing that, and I don't think many people would be interested in hearing me do that either. So, yeah, I think that's a wrap. Have you got any ideas what we're doing on your channel next time?
I have a few ideas, but I think I want to do one that we've been getting requests for since the very beginning. I'm thinking of doing Zulu.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about doing that as well. I contacted someone and asked him. I thought it would be on my channel, but
it's fine. If we could do that next time on your
channel. Well, we can still do it on yours, but there's somebody else maybe going to come on who's very knows a lot about it. But we'll organize that off air.
Would that be Apogelic Majesty?
No. Okay. No, not him. All right. Oh, there's another one. £20. Thank you very much, Plastic African. Good work, sir. Thanks. Well, thank you very much. And take care out there, everybody. It's getting wild. It's getting wild out there. So watch your backs out there. The world's going to hell. And I'll see you next time.